This week, the precious metals sector rebounded from oversold conditions while the Dow Industrials added 151 points, finishing at a new all-time record weekly close. Your host, Chris Waltzek, back with you with two big guest interviews. Rich Dad Robert Kiyosaki starts off the program. He's not worried one iota. What the spot price of gold is doing this week, this month, or even this year. He has no plans of parting with his stockpile. He's ignoring those annual gyrations in price because it's number one on his top list of five must-own items. Unlike oil wells, real estate, and paper assets, a trip to the neighborhood coin shop is all that's required to start investing in the yellow metal. He recommends U.S. real estate, though, and business ownership for upper-scale investors for their tax haven qualities. Next, at bat, Sev Manesian, who helps baby boomers retire in with 500,000 baby boomers expected to retire each month on average for the next decade. Millions of investors will require specialized investment advice, and that's where Sev Manesian comes into play. He helps people in the Chicagoland area, and he wants to help our listeners. He says that many of his clients are finding that they are paying way too much in taxes than they expected due to high tax brackets. He advocates a plan for diverting funds into not only gold and silver, but also rental properties to earn passive income. He cautions that at least 80% of investors are paying more than necessary in mutual fund and retirement plan costs. Several thousand per year on average, investors can divert those wasted funds into a solid portfolio of diversified investments. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weatherman report. Partly sunny skies appeared over the precious metals exchanges despite the continued sell-off of the U.S. dollar. Investors viewed the better-than-expected economic data and the FOMC meeting decision to drop monthly stimulus by another $10 billion as indications of better times ahead for the economy, reducing the safe haven appeal of the metals. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX Exchange, gold only dropped $3, though, for the week, ending around $1,300. The yellow metal is still higher for the year by about 6%. Silver dropped only 20 cents, ending near 1952, and still within earshot of the break-even point for the year. Palladium added $2, finishing at $8.11 on supply concerns due to sanction concerns by the West on Russia. Platinum finished at $14.40, up about $16. South Africa is still the source of about 40% of the world's palladium. West Texas Intermediate crude fell about 77 cents, despite the increased tensions in Ukraine, ending just shy of $100 a barrel. Meanwhile, Fed governors cut monthly bond purchases for the fourth consecutive meeting, dropping the total monthly stimulus measures to $45 billion, down from the original $85 billion this week. Policymakers said further reductions in measured steps are likely. The Fed meeting statement indicated that the benchmark overnight lending rate, the Fed funds, could increase next year. Nevertheless, this was previously factored into most market models. Demand for gold is red hot in India amid a top festival in India known for gold-giving ceremonies. The premium for spot skyrocketed $110 an ounce over the London cash price. That's about three times the typical figure. With nearly 1 billion Hindus as potential gold bullion customers, it's small surprise that the price firmed into the weekend. In related news, demand for silver continues unabated, with manufacturing demand stemming from car makers, jewelry, tableware, climbing it to the highest point in nearly a decade. Silver is particularly useful for electronic components where demand is nearly perfectly inelastic, such as solar and photovoltaics. With the economic engine back on track, it is poised to benefit from the anticipated increase in global economic output, which is projected to increase by about 3% this year, and a bit more next year, according to a Bloomberg report. Demand for solar panel production alone is likely to skyrocket for decades to come. Up to 1 ounce is required to manufacture a photovoltaic panel. Increasing geopolitical risks rattled the markets this week on news of escalating tensions between Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine sent armored vehicles and artillery to seize a pro-separatist force stronghold, despite President Vladimir Putin's demands to fall back. Investors are seeking the gold safe haven on reports that the Ukrainian military lost two helicopters in the conflict. The United Nations Security Council held a security meeting on Friday to discuss Ukraine and growing violence in the region. Washington and the EU are waiting for the outcome of the Ukrainian elections before making any firm commitments. The potential for a broader conflict, though, between NATO members, plus the strategic significance of the Ukrainian gas pipelines, make the situation even more grave. Bottom line on the precious metals. Well, strong signs of accumulation are beginning to show up on the technical side of the equation here for gold and silver. While we're starting to see some signs of distribution continue in the U.S. dollar, which is very close to breaking down from support. So, for the rest of this report and all of next week's candidates, including at least one solid gold candidate that looks like it's ready to break out, our best dividend-paying gold stock, either sign up or log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility was virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange this week on better-than-expected domestic economic reports. For the week, the Dow was up 151 points, ending at 16,512, registering the highest weekly close on record. The S&P 500 added 17, finishing at 1881, rebounding, while the NASDAQ held key support at 4,000, ending higher by 48 at 4,123. On Friday, a Labor Department report showed that U.S. employers added the most jobs in 2 years. The jobless rate plunged to 6.3%, the lowest reading since September 2008. The U.S. generated 288,000 jobs in April, the biggest increase in more than 2 years, and the unemployment rate fell to 6.3%, registering a strong performance that suggests the economy is accelerating after a weak first quarter number. The unemployment rate is the lowest in several years, and consumer spending is moving up sharply higher, almost 1% in March. Of course, the consumer makes up over 70% of the GDP number. The gross domestic product is expected to climb by about 3% this year and even higher in 2015, surpassing a 10-year high, according to a Bloomberg survey. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, our seven-component sentiment index pendulum remains firmly in the fearful category, despite the solid market gains this week. So, once again, the typical investor is missing the boat. They're still racked in fear, while the rest of us are adding to our positions, so I expect further upward momentum to carry into next week. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Robert Kiyosaki and Seb Manessian. Stay with us here at GoldSeek. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much.
Why don't we start off today with your views on gold and silver? So far, it's a pretty good year for the metals.
I don't buy gold and silver necessarily for gold and silver. I buy gold and silver when I see what our government is doing. And the government is printing money, quantitative easing, and it's propping up the stock market. So a lot of the printed money goes into the stock market. Now, knowing that, and also to suppress the price of gold and silver. So knowing that, I buy gold and silver, not because it's going up or down on prices, simply because I know the end is near.
And I wonder if you might tell us some more about your latest book. You have quite a few in your repertoire.
I think the school system is completely, at this point, obsolete. More and more, like I was reading the New York Times this Sunday. And the big fight is not so much the economy right now, it is the crumbling education system. And one of the reasons the education system is crumbling is, number one, is the teachers' unions. Our kids are not being brought up to date, and they're not viable in today's society. That's why student unemployment is so high. So I wrote why A students work for C students, and the reason for that is, what good is it if you're an A student? You know, you don't make any more money necessarily. I mean, you may become a doctor or a lawyer. But in the real world, you know, my banker has never asked me for my report card. All my banker asked me for is my financial statement. And so that's why ever since I started writing back in the 90s, was that we have to have financial education in school because we're going broke. I mean, our country is going down because most of our leaders have no financial education. I'm not Republican or Democrat, but they become rich when they become president. And you see, when you look at the classical battle between Republicans and Democrats, it's the money people versus those that don't have any money. It's just a horrible situation. Our kids pay the price. So that's why I wrote why A students work for C students and B students work for the government. A stands for academics. They have good in academics. B students are bureaucrats that become public servants or executives for big companies. and the C students are the capitalists. And what we need in our society is not more A students, academics. We don't need any more bureaucrats, but we do need more capitalists who can provide jobs. So that's why I wrote, why A students work for C students and B students work for government.
You talk about folks born with a silver spoon in their mouths, and I think it's difficult for them to relate to what the typical bourgeois, middle-class person out here goes through day to day, the grind, just barely making ends meet, government taking more taxes, and inflation eating up everything else. Why don't you tell folks your secret recipe, as much of it as you care to today?
I wrote my book, Why, Rich Dad and Poor Dad, because it's a true story. My rich dad was my best friend's father, and he was a man who started with nothing also, but he was an entrepreneur. And my poor dad was an A student, an academic, so it was really the contrast between a capitalist, my rich dad, and an A student, my poor dad, an academic, that I realized that there was something missing in school. And so that's why at the age of 9, I started studying with my rich dad. And I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it's all in that story. I had to work for him for free because he said, if I pay you, you think like an employee. And he started really early with me. He started teaching me about money, just playing Monopoly, you know, 4 greenhouses, 1 red hotel. And today I own 4,000 houses and a red hotel. Yeah, and I use debt financing. I don't use my money. You know, as Rich Dad often said, only lazy people use their own money. So I use my bank's money.
I know that you've owned Wells in the past, and it's certainly been one of the highlights of the commodities sector. It's well over $100 a barrel for some time, and it looks like after many years of consolidation, we might actually make an attempt on that previous $147 a barrel number that we posted way back in 2008, 2009. Any comments?
Yeah, well, I don't really track the price of oil because I do have over 400 oil wells. I also do not invest in oil stocks, like I don't invest in Exxon or Mobil or Chevron. The reason I invest in oil is the same reason I invest in real estate, is because of taxes. Now, when I put $100,000 into the stock market, let's say I buy Exxon, I don't get any tax breaks. But I put $100,000 into an oil well as a partner with the entrepreneur, then I get 30% tax break. So I get $30,000 back. That's a 30% ROI. Now, I'm not recommending people do it, but I've been in oil since 1968, 69, 67, really, and I understand oil. So because, you know, the rich get richer because they get tax incentives. And so when I invest in oil, I put $100,000 in, I pay $30,000 less in taxes. Yeah, that's a nice return. Also, let's say I make $1,000 a month from my oil production, I only pay taxes on 85% of it. Now, if I invest in stocks, you know, notice the Obamacare law, I'll pay taxes, higher taxes, on any dividend and any capital gain. So why would I invest in stocks? So again, it's oil and real estate are basically tax plays for me.
Switch back to the precious metals mining sector. It's really struggled for several years here. Many folks are starting to take a second look at gold and silver stocks because of the way they've been beaten down. Do you see a resurgence or maybe some opportunity here on the horizon for the mining sector?
The reason gold and silver, from some aspect, I said, is not really to make money. It's an insurance policy against, I don't trust my government. I don't know how many times I got to say you. He's trying to make money on it. I buy gold and silver simply because I'd rather do gold and silver than save money, because every time they print QEs, quantitative easing, the value of your money goes down. So gold and silver has been around for 5,000 years. I don't think the dollar is going to be around another 200 years or 100 years at all. It's going to be gone. So I don't save dollars, I save gold and silver. The other thing, that's the reason gold and silver is suppressed in price, is because the Federal Reserve doesn't want us to own it. And the reason I know they don't want to own it is where they give me a tax incentive to buy oil production, they punish me for owning gold and silver with a 30% tax. So I have a 30% capital gains if I sell my gold and silver. So I don't sell it. I just hide it in a vault in a secret place.
Do you worry at all about capital controls? You know, some people are concerned that the government continues to kind of ratchet down on every area of our savings and transferring funds internationally. Are you concerned at all that, you know, people might wake up and notice that they've had a Cypriot-style or MF Global-style haircut in their portfolios?
It's already happened through Obamacare. Every time you look at the name of the government, you know, law, Affordable Health Care Act, what that means is not going to be affordable. That's what it means. You know, it's not affordable. It's really a tax act. What Obamacare does is tax interest, it tax capital gains, and it tax dividends. You know, and so anybody who is in the stock market or the bond market is now paying higher taxes.
But how can you punish the productive component of society? In what world does that make any sense?
Well, it doesn't make sense for the poor and middle class, but it makes sense for the rich. And that's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Lesson number one in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the rich don't work for money. So when Obama says he's going to tax the rich, he doesn't tax the rich. He taxes high-income people, high-net-worth people who have high-paying jobs and invest in the stock market. You know, back in 1996, I believe, there was a book called The Millionaire Next Door, written by a guy named Stanley. It was a good book for its time, but today The Millionaire Next Door is the foreclosure next door. And, you know, the whole supposition on The Millionaire Next Door was how wonderful America is. You know, you buy a house for $100,000 and 10 years later it's worth $1 million. You know, you have a $100,000 stock retirement portfolio is now worth $1 million. And then 2007, the subprime market hit and The Millionaire Next Door got hammered. I don't know when people are going to wake up and smell the coffee, but they're being set up by our own government. You know, that's why they don't tax the rich. They tax doctors, lawyers, CEOs, and guys who play the stock market. Now, they also punish those who hold gold and silver, but like I said, I'm not playing gold and silver. It's not my game. I would rather hold gold and silver than hold dollars, so it's a different strategy.
So what advice would you give then to the typical listener today, just waking up to the prospects of much higher inflation, stagnation in the economy like we saw in the 70s?
I wouldn't listen to a financial planner or a stockbroker because they don't really, if you're buying those gold and silver ETFs, you're playing right into their hands. I don't touch that stuff. I'm just saying you better figure out who you are, what game you want to play. My wife plays golf. I don't play golf. You know what I mean? You got to figure the game. So I love gold and silver. I've owned gold and silver mines. Just five things you got to be holding right now. Number one is gold and silver. Two is grub, food. You got to have food. So I've stored food. Three is ground or real estate. Like, you don't want to own property in Detroit. You know, you want real estate with food and water on it that's safe, not next to criminals. Fewer where it's possible. And then you have to have gasoline, which is oil and gas, and five is a gun. We're not in a safe position, and they want you to think we're safe, but we've never been in a more precarious position in U.S. history. So that's why I love my gold and silver, and I have my own guy who loads my bullets, because that's what they're after, is the bullets next. I am a former Marine helicopter gunship pilot. I was deadly with an M60 and rockets, and terrible with a pistol. Well, Forbes magazine, you know, way back when, I think in 86, said buying machine guns is one of the best investments you can make because they don't let you make them anymore. I hate to say it, but nothing has changed for me. You know, education, which is Rich Dad, is going to be the biggest industry of all because people will finally wake up and they'll find out there's no financial education in school. That's not an accident. And number two is, I just said to you, Obamacare is, it's really a tax act. And when they basically hammered dividends, interest, and capital gains, they're coming after the millionaires next door, the guys with high-paying jobs and big stock portfolios. I mean, they have to do something. I mean, you know, I'm not a conspiracy type of guy necessarily, but I don't doubt there's one going on. You know, I'm just going, what is it? And I read years and years ago, that one of the things was the problem with Americans is we had the entrepreneurial spirit, and they couldn't break us. So the way they could break us, the ultra-rich, was ultimately to get us dependent upon the government for life support. And that started with, you know, Social Security in 1933, I believe. And today the American spirit, American dream, has been replaced by the entitlement mentality. So I do think there's something to breaking the spirit, and I think the American spirit is broken, I'm afraid. I hate to say that. And that's why if you have guys who can promise you to give you more food stamps or whatever, and everybody's happy.
There's just no free lunch, is there? There's always some string attached.
There's a lot of people who expect one. That's the problem.
Exactly. And, you know, speaking of free lunches, food stamps near a record high, just as they're cutting back on the programs, a lot of people have found themselves in really precarious situations. But now, well, who's going to feed them? People just can't afford to feed their families.
Yeah, food is a very big issue, you know. I get a little irritable around dinner. Now, one thing good about the Marine Corps is they really taught us how, you know, close to animals we are. And in Florida, during flight school, they used to throw us into the swamps and have us survive for 4 or 5 days without food. Within like 2 days, we were primal. I mean, I would have chewed off my best friend's leg at that point. So anyway, I think we're 2 days away from animals. And that's why, you know, one of the G's, grub, you should have food in your house.
Think back to about 6 to 8 months ago when the food stamp cards were cut off all around the country and people emptied the grocery store shelves within hours. We are such a just-in-time society that as soon as we get cut off, there's going to be pandemonium within hours, not days anymore.
I get really interested when all they go, well, we'll take all the guns away. I'm going, well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, tell us how that's worked out for other countries in the past.
Well, from what the studies I have, because I am a former Marine, every place where they don't have guns, people are very subservient, you know, because they're afraid of authority, the Gestapo, you know, government, police action. And then it is true, then the criminals have the guns, because I go down to Mexico quite a bit, and for a country that has no guns, it's a lot of guns. Oh, man, I was coming up from through the border, and there are lines and lines and lines and lines of armored vehicles of the Mexican army. They're ready for war. And for a population that's not allowed to have guns, who are they afraid of? Well, obviously the criminals. Well, when you ask me why I live in Phoenix, Arizona, is every citizen is allowed to carry a gun concealed. So why am I in Arizona? Because it's a very peaceful town. You don't find me, you know, making high signs to other drivers because they're probably armed too. No, I don't. You know, we're much more polite because everybody's armed. Unfortunately, when that Gabby Giffords, the representative, got shot, there were several guys who were armed, but they were afraid to shoot because if they pull a gun out, the police would shoot them. So you got to think a lot when you carry a gun. Oh, yeah, I think. And I got to think very carefully about using it. But all you have to do is go to Mexico and see a society that doesn't allow citizens to own guns, and there's more guns everywhere. And that's, you know, on both sides, the military and the bad guys. I had a friend who was just shot there about 4 years ago. I don't know what people are thinking. Do we have utopian society? You know, I'd like to have one, but I don't think so. Well, when people ask me about guns, I just say I support the Second Amendment, which is true. No, you want to take guns away, then change the Second Amendment.
Well, you're not far from what's happening there at the Bundy Ranch in Nevada. Well, you may have heard that they're essentially having a showdown over the cattle rancher there in Nevada. The government wants to take all of his cattle away. They have a huge ranch simply because he's been allowing them to roam on public property. They say, hey, you owe us $1 million. And he says, my family's been doing this for 100, 200 years. What are you talking about? Feds coming from all over the country outside his jurisdiction at his ranch. Well, guess what? Militias suddenly swarm in support. Quite a showdown going on there. I wanted to ask you about REITs, you know, real estate investment trusts. They've been doing very well in recent years, and they tend to have fantastic, of course, dividend yields, as well as a lot of interesting tax-related qualities. Do you have any interest in the REITs?
Stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, savings are all paper. I'm a hard asset guy, you know, and I don't trust my government. I don't know about it. I hate to say that. I was an academy graduate, 6 years in the Marine Corps. Anybody calls me a traitor, then I'll shoot them. You know, I'm going, hey, come on, give me a break. It's freedom of speech here. So I just don't trust my government. I buy gold and silver. One last story is that, talk about investments. I have a friend. I mean, he's an attorney. I'll forgive him for that. But he had, I think, 10 million rounds of ammunition. And he bought them at 6 cents a unit. And then, unfortunately, after that shooting in Newtown or something like that, his rounds went to $1.20 a unit. But he says, I never made so much money in one day. Unfortunately, that's not the kind of way you want to make money, but I think that is a reflection of the insanity and instability within our society. And that's why I speak the way I speak. If you know, I was watching CNBC this morning, I said, oh, yeah, don't worry, it's fine, everything's okay. And I go, well, why is unemployment so high? Why is food stamps so high? Why is Social Security broke? Why is the national debt going through the roof? And why are we printing $1 trillion a day or whatever we're doing? So that's why I talk to you. I think gold and silver is a good start. You know, it takes a lot of intelligence to do real estate, a lot of study, a lot of education. But gold and silver, just trundle down to your local gold or silver dealer. Don't buy rare coins, just buy, you know, silver maple leaves or silver Kruger, silver or gold Krugerrands, and feel good about it.
What about silver? What about 90% silver coins?
You know, most people are not going to do what I do or probably what you do, is I'm in the market studying constantly. You know, I'm buying another hotel. That takes a lot of sophistication.
Really doesn't take a lot of gray matter to simply buy near spot some gold and silver. You're not negotiating over a collector's item on some rare coin from the 1920s. Just start building a stockpile of the precious metals.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch rare coins because that's what you call a loss leader. They say, oh, buy gold. You know, they see Pat Boone advertising buy gold and silver. But when you call up, they're going to sell you a St. Gaudens or whatever it is. Something you have no idea is true value, but that's where they make their money. They don't make their money with you buying gold and silver coins. I mean, spot prices. You know, if it's $20, they don't make, they're going to make, what, $2? So, but they, I understand they have to stay in business and they're going to try and sell you a rare coin. And I understand that. But if you don't know what a rare coin is, don't buy it. You know, it's like, I don't buy diamonds because I can't tell a diamond from glass. Yeah, but, you know, the reason I love regular, like Krugerrands and maple leaves and Eagle, is there's a daily market for it. It's called spot. And you know what it is that day. You don't have to go and guess and negotiate and wonder. It's worldwide.
Are you spreading your eggs around? Are you sending anything offshore, maybe to a Brinks vaults in Canada or Panama, Switzerland, anything like that?
No, I think one of the things that people do not realize, I mean, except for safety, America is one of the best tax havens in the world, but it's not in stocks and bonds and paper. It's in real estate and business. And so when you understand that, then it's a tax haven. Otherwise, are these people trying to dodge it and all this stuff? The reason I like real estate is two things, debt and taxes. I borrow, say it's $1 million property. I'll borrow $1 million, make my 10%, so I make $100,000, and I don't pay tax on it.
Well, you've told us in the past that whenever you go into a business deal, you ask, how is this person or how is this deal going to come back to bite me? When it comes to real estate, tell listeners how it can come back to bite them and things to watch out for.
Real estate is basically property management. You've got to know how to manage the property. I mean, so many people say, oh, I'm just going to manage it myself, man. I'll tell you a horror story. We all make mistakes. That's how you learn. When I bought this property and I was managing it myself and I was going to paint the thing, so I brought a painter in and the tenant says, hey, don't pay the painter, I'll paint it for you. Yeah, he said, I'll do it for less. I said, 3 weeks later, I go back in and he did paint it. He only painted it as high as he could reach. So he had this roller, let's say he could reach 7 feet and the ceiling was 8, there was this 1 foot gap. So I had to hire a painter to come in and repaint it. But anyway, that's how we learn, you know, but the reason I love gold and silver, you don't have to have a tenant. So like I said, he's going after the millionaire next door, anybody with a high-paying job, and anybody who has stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. And that's why it's in savings. But the point is here, I say it again and again and again, I'm not buying gold and silver as an investment. I buy gold and silver like I buy a gun. That's all. I hope I never have to use it. Well, I think one of the beauties of silver is you can still go and use it as money. You know, gold's a little tougher because not too many people want to change, you know, 2000. See, I see a U.S. silver dollar as a $20 bill. That's what I see it as. And I can just go to somebody and say, you want $40? I'll give you $2 silver. Here's the spot price. So, okay. So it's still money. But if I use it as an investment where I pay the capital gains, I lose money.
And I think that's one of the reasons why the powers that be don't like silver, because they know that it facilitates under-the-table transactions, which kind of pulls them out of the equation, doesn't it?
Right. You and I know that the whole savings system was a rip off our money. You know, you put in $10, they lend out $100. It's called inflation. So the whole way you lose money is by you save money and you invest for the long term in the stock market and you have a job. Those are the three ways that rip you off. You have a job, you pay taxes, you save money, they just inflate it, and your 401k is the same as taxes. They take your money before you get paid. It's all set up against you. That's the way I look at it. Again, I'm a very patriotic individual. I just don't like what the government's doing.
Whole system is set up in order to extract the most blood from, you know, the typical individual and family.
Complete heist. Look, the only reason there is a monetary system is to steal our wealth. That's the only reason.
No, it's a scene right out of The Matrix. You know, I mean, we're all just a bunch of Neos walking around, and we don't know that we're being bled dry because we can't even see the system. It's behind the scenes.
So that's why I like gold and silver, not ETFs. I like the real stuff. And keep it in a place that nobody can trace it, find it. You know, and I'm not spending, I'm not investing. Well, that was that whole thing with the IRS, that woman, what was her name, Lois Lerner or something? They were banging on the Tea Party. I'm not a Tea Party guy, but they were banging on them. And then what does she do? She gets a bonus and a retirement. She takes the fifth. I mean, if that's not corrupt, give me a break here. If I take the fifth, then you know I'm the crook. I haven't taken any fifth. I'm telling you what I'm doing.
And I want you to tell folks a bit more about how they can find out about the Rich Dad services, any web pages, and what you're working on right now.
Just go to richdad.com. Is that I think the future of education is on your iPhone. So we're doing financial education over iPads, iPhones, and computers. Because I think the education system's corrupt. That's why there's no financial education in our schools.
Would you be recommending folks who are starting out to try to be entrepreneurs in the education arena? Is that going to be the place for, you know, future millionaires?
My prediction is education is going to be the biggest business of all.
Bigger than healthcare with the baby boomers retiring?
Oh, bigger than that. Well, see, everything is education. You know what I mean? The military is education. Everything's education.
What about security on the horizon as people age? And, you know, they need to protect their assets, their homes, their families?
More than you know. You know, there's a thing called Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the triangle. Is that when people feel threatened, the first thing that goes out the window is morality.
I mean, if you read back over the French revolutions and everything, that a very similar situation where the currency was devalued over a very long period of time, and then suddenly you notice huge graft and corruption all throughout the system. Everything that you just talked about was the result of the implosion of the currency because it was just deflated away.
They feel it when they go to the supermarket and they see prices going up and hear the government say there's no inflation. You know, when Obama came to office in, 2008, gasoline was $1.60, and now it's $3.60. And he has the, I'm not blaming him, he has the audacity to say there's no inflation. And the reason that is because Nixon passed that CPI law that inflation took out fuel and food. But they lie to us. Get educated.
But you know, there's another aspect of that, because I've actually decomposed the CPI number myself following John Williams' formula. And what I found was the food and energy, you're right, it's important. But what folks have missed is what's really held inflation in check was the decline in housing prices, because that's a big factor in the composition of the CPI. So with housing prices off, way off their 2006, 2007 peaks, that's kind of given, I think, the government a carte blanche opportunity to pump up the money side of the equation. And now that housing prices are moving back up, I think they're losing some of that wiggle room.
That plus, you know, there's a currency war on right now. You know, Japan just dropped the value of their currency. So that all that ultimately will lead to higher inflation. But right now, Walmart shoppers kind of enjoy it because everybody's trying to bring up lower-priced goods. Bad situation.
You know, speaking of Japan, I don't know if you know this, they have $3 trillion in pension fund money sitting there, one of the largest pools of funds in the world. People are wondering whether or not that, which is highly bond, you know, an Abenomics-related bond market, as that even starts to trickle into the precious metals, it could send them sky high.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time. I mean, I agree with you. The money is running all over the place right now. You know, what I feel sorry for is all the guys in bonds today. You know, and what they said was that when you're younger, you buy growth stocks. When you're older, you buy bonds. And then what happened was, you know, since I was in that CFP class, bonds have been in a bull market because the returns have gone down and down and down. Now, as we know, the pendulum will swing when bond prices or interest, you know, the dividend, what interest paid from bonds goes up, and bonds will collapse again. All my generation, the baby boomers, who are holding bonds right now thinking bonds are safe.
Okay, last question as we wrap up here. Are you a marksman shot or not?
I'm a machine gunner. I really am. I'm not kidding you. I flew the Huey gunship, and we carried M60s.
It was at a 50 caliber?
30 cal, belt fed. You know, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on them.
On a single helicopter. How is that possible?
6 machine guns and 36 rockets.
Who would be manning all of those machine guns?
Well, the 4 are fired by the pilot, and then 2 side guns by the gunners. So when we dove in, the pilot's hammering away with rockets and machine guns, and then when we pull out, I have to roll either left or right, and then the gunners cover my tail.
But what kept the unfriendly fire, what kept them from shooting at the rotors, at the sensitive areas of the helicopter?
Well, they shoot at you, but you have to keep, that's why you have so many machine guns and rockets. And that's why I'm saying the pull, when you're coming out of the dive, that's when you're either rolling left or right so your gunners can keep their heads down.
Chinook is a double propellered. It's a very large, usually carries heavy equipment.
Yeah, it's an army transport, and Marines flew the 46 a little smaller. But in Vietnam, I saw one of those rockets go right up the tail of a Jolly Green Giant, man. It is frightening.
And so we're talking about RPGs?
But in Vietnam, I actually saw what's called an SA-7, a heat seeker, go straight up the tail of a CH-50.
All right. Well, Robert Kiyosaki, we appreciate your time today, and we're going to put links up there to the Rich Dad websites.
Yeah, please go to it. See our latest technology, which is, you know, our games on mobile devices and our books through a thing called Clutch, which is a faster way of reading, a more interesting way of rating. So we are a financial education company. That's what we do.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
I have a guest who's making his debut appearance on the show. It's Sev Manashian. He is a CFP, a certified financial planner, who helps folks prepare for retirement. And with millions of baby boomers retiring every year, folks born from 1946 to 1964, this is a growing theme and something that everyone needs to be thinking of. In fact, Dennis Miller claims that the baby boomer generation is the least prepared in preparation for retirement if they want to maintain their living standard. Welcome, Sev.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure.
Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself as well as the services that you provide, and then we'll jump into some details on how our listeners can better prepare for their retirement years, golden years.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So Public Retirement Planners, we're just a full-service financial planning, investment management, insurance provider, and the main focus is on helping those that are in the public sector, police officers, fire chiefs, police chiefs, public sector employees in general, helping them prepare for retirement.
Very good. Well, you know, we have many of that group listening today, if our email responses and subscriber base is any indication. So why don't we jump right into some of the key components of a solid retirement account? I'm sure that you're going to be looking at a lot of diversification, because we want to diversify away as much non-systematic risk as possible, company risk. And of course, we do this through diversifying our shares and our bonds, but we also want to diversify away systematic risk, i.e. market risk. And we can do this by investing in non-correlated markets. Please tell us your thoughts.
Sure. That's excellent statements, Chris. And just a couple things before we wanted to jump into those topics. There was one thing in particular I wanted to really get across to the listeners, and just going back about a minute or so, you're absolutely right when you say public sector employees, especially police, fire, public works guys, they love your show. So believe me, we talk about it all the time. But you know, one thing I just want, and you had talked about the baby boom generation. We have a lot of individuals from that generation obviously retiring. And what I found starting just a few years ago is that these individuals have been putting into retirement plans, let's say 401k plans. That's for the private sector. But in the public sector, mainly where I operate, the 457 plan is the plan that many of these baby boomers have put money into. And what they're finding out from a tax perspective, talking about risk, what some are finding out is that the pre-tax dollars that they saved away, let's say last decade or in the 90s, now they're starting to withdraw those dollars. And for now, this is the exception, not the rule. But what's happening is that these individuals are actually paying, if not the same, but a little bit more in taxes on those dollars that they had originally planned. So that's causing a little bit of a, I guess you could say, a little bit of a tax problem for these individuals. The mechanics of it is what has been happening is, let's say if you have a police chief of, and I'm here just in the Chicagoland area, but let's say if you have a police chief who retires from a relatively large municipality, a lot of times smaller municipalities will then take that chief on to act as their police or fire chief. And what's happening is that that individual is making a pretty decent income in this new position, let's say about $120,000 per year. That chief or that highly paid individual is also getting a pension between, let's call it $60,000 to $80,000 per year, in my opinion, well-deserved, because those are some brave folks there. In addition to the pension, a lot of times his or her spouse is working, let's say bringing in another $80,000 per year. And now when that individual goes to buy, let's say, a cabin, a brand new car, his or her son or daughter goes to get married, they're withdrawing, let's just say, $50,000 to $60,000 from their deferred compensation plan. What's happened is years earlier when they were earning a lot less, they were in a lower tax bracket and getting a decent tax break. But now that they have all this income, they are being pushed into these higher tax brackets. So when it comes time to take these deferred compensation dollars, 401k, 457, 403b type plans, they are getting a little bit of a tax shock. So what I've been trying to do here is just to educate customers about diversifying possibly outside of some of these deferred compensation plans. And I just have a few ideas that I'd like to share with the audience. This is kind of an interesting idea. It has worked for some individuals, but instead of, let's say, preparing for retirement by dumping in huge sums of money into these deferred compensation plans and then having to pay the tax man when pulling those dollars out, one idea, and this is for individuals that are really, let's say, confident and really know what they're doing when it comes to real estate, they could treat rental property, provided that their timing is right, provided that, again, that they have a background in real estate or they have an advisor that's really good with picking out real estate, they can actually fund their retirement with some rental real estate. So it's just a little bit of diversifying outside of these tax plans. And then, of course, they have tax advantages by buying rental properties. They have depreciation expenses, you know, any sort of expenses that go into running that that property that they can take, you know, take advantage of.
Sev, are we talking about rental properties that are owned outright, or are you talking about taking on mortgages here?
Well, they can take on a mortgage. Okay, now let's say if you have, and just as an example, let's say that you have your parent with a three-year-old child or your grandparent with a three-year-old grandchild. Let's say that you want to send that individual to that child to college when he or she turns 18. And one way that you can finance that college is not necessarily using these popular 529 plans. You have to watch out because a lot of those can be loaded up with fees. But if you really want hands-on control of your dollars, perhaps you think about taking out a mortgage. Again, just depending on the timing, of course, is very important. Or you can certainly buy a piece of real estate outright. But as I mentioned before, you have to be very, very careful. The timing has to be right. There has to be, you want to be buying, of course, real estate in areas where the job market is relatively stable or is expected to grow. So here, and I can only speak about here in the Chicagoland area, but I haven't looked too recently, but I think about 20 to 25% of the largest 100 companies in the U.S. are located either in Chicago or in the surrounding suburbs. So to me, that indicates a relatively stable job market. So if somebody takes on a mortgage, if they're careful about it, and have renters pay down that mortgage over a 15-year period, then all of a sudden what you've done in a relatively decent amount of time is that you've paid off a piece of property, you now have your child or grandchild who's 18 and ready to go to college, and those rental payments coming in from the renters can either offset or completely pay for 3, 4, 5 years of tuition.
For folks that maybe are not comfortable with having to manage or find a manager for these rental properties or any of the other headaches that might go along with it, let me know your thoughts on real estate investment trusts. I mean, right now we typically are recommending REITs that offer yields from as high as 5 to 15%. And some of these royalty trusts, energy trusts, are offering essentially almost tax-free dividends from 11 to 20% because they're taxed at ordinary income levels. I wonder if you could give me an idea how your concept differs or if these two are compatible.
I think they're certainly compatible. I was just giving the direct ownership real estate example or idea just as a way because of diversifying against equities. Not that I personally have a real estate investment trusts, and of course I've paid attention to the Alpha Stocks newsletter, so I get ideas, of course, from your great newsletter. But what I'm finding is individuals are so overloaded with equities that I'm just using the real estate just as another example of a way to diversify. But the real estate investment trust, if somebody has a good advisor or if they're confident, I think it's a good way to diversify away from, let's say, just general equities. Could obviously provide some good income, as we found with some of the REITs that are suggested in the Alpha Stocks newsletter.
Anything else that you'd like to share with the listeners today that's coming up in your business practice?
I do want to say, just going back to the plans very quickly, is 401k, 457s. I guess you could say I'm on a little bit of a mission. I would encourage listeners to really pay attention to your mutual fund expenses and also the administration, the custodian and record keeping charges that are associated with these plans. Because what investors can do, they could find, if it's effective from a tax standpoint, they can save their dollars outside of employer-sponsored plans. That could be an avenue to go down because they can save, let's say, 0.5% all the way up to 2%, sometimes even 2.5% on these administration, record keeping, and custodial costs, which are fully disclosed by the companies that are offering these plans. But I found that if I had to put a percentage, I would probably say 80% of investors are totally unaware of these high costs that are associated with these plans. And, you know, if we say that the S&P would return, I don't know, if we go back 60 years or so, I think it's, and Chris, you'd probably have to back me up here, but I think it's a safe bet to say the S&P has returned around 7.5% the last 60 years. But investors in these retirement plans don't realize that they could be paying 1.5%, 2.5% just in costs, just for the privilege of having that plan. So they might be able to go out and do something like buy rental real estate, buy agricultural land, timberland, stocks outright, some of the REITs that we were talking about. So I just wanted to encourage people just to please look into your costs. You could be up against a pretty heavy headwind there.
Everyone needs to do their due diligence. I'd only add, though, you have to keep in mind all of the significant costs associated with home ownership. I mean, we're talking about everything from taxes to upkeep, repairs. If I was going to send anyone down this avenue, I'd let them know this is going to be a little bit more involved probably than a part-time job. And then once you have several years under your belt, I mean, it's probably a self-regulating system. I mean, that's true. But at first, there's going to be a learning curve. We want to make sure that everyone knows that this is going to take some due diligence and work on your part. Well, Seth, we certainly appreciate your thoughts today. Could you please tell our listeners how they can find out more about the services you provide?
Sure, Chris. If anyone is interested in speaking with me, my website and company name are the same, so it's Public Retirement Planners, and it would be Public Retirement Planners, plural there on the end, .com. I'd be happy to speak with anybody that that has any questions for me.
Very good. We're going to look forward to having you back on the show, Sev.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. The starkness of the housing crisis can be viewed objectively most of the time, when it does not impact you or a loved one personally. But every so often a situation arises when you come face to face with the pain of someone staring down the direct impact of the housing crisis for the very first time. A close friend of mine just rented his home to someone who did a short sale on very short notice and ended up losing nearly $200,000 in the process on their family home. The 2008 economic collapse is still catching up with people slowly, surely, and painfully. Not all short sales are created equally. If you listen to local attorneys and realtors hawking their services on weekend radio, I don't know the particulars on this family's tax or deficiency judgment situation, but the pain is real, and the uncertainty is anxiety-producing. If you go back and trace the history of the Great Depression, it didn't happen all at once or over a six-month period. It happened like a giant molasses wave, spread out over many years, slowly destroying people's lives and living standards along the way. It was much more self-evident in the 1930s and other points in history because we did not have mass media to massage, mask, and misdirect our awareness of what was happening in real life. Now, we are literally brainwashed with news stories, images, and Twitter feeds that create a virtual landscape of what we think the world is or is supposed to be, not what it really is. There's a Carnival Barker on every iPhone app, iPad, laptop, TV, or radio news show. You name it, we live in a virtual world. We are brainwashed by our own devices. If it's not you, or a family member, or a friend that's experiencing a foreclosure or short sale, then the crushing metal jaws of the housing vice may remain invisible and largely academic to you. But on those occasions when you do meet someone who is financially alone, feeling vulnerable, and maybe even blaming themselves for not being able to keep their head above water, and somehow feeling responsible for a problem that, at its root, was created by Alan Greenspan, and then accelerated by Ben Bernanke at the Federal Reserve, The best thing you can do, if the situation presents itself, is let them know that it's all right. Because there will come a time when people who have been through certain kinds of financial devastation come to realize there was nothing they could have done to save the situation or themselves at that moment in time. One by one, individual light bulbs go off in people's minds as they realize something greater than their own actions contributed to the financial hardship they experienced or are experiencing. That moment, when it happens, is a magical teaching moment. Be there for those friends and family when it happens. All the talks and discussions about why gold is a store of value, or why the dollar is going to collapse, or why you need to prepare, is nothing compared to being there for someone to explain how events greater than their own everyday actions contributed to, and in some cases caused, the unimaginable hardships a person may be experiencing in their own life right now. That level of profound insight, when a person needs it the most, can help rescue their self-esteem, their pride, their self-confidence, their motivation, and themselves from psychological defeat that wasn't theirs to own in the first place. Being there for someone, whether it's a foreclosure, a short sale, a bankruptcy, a job loss, or some other traumatic economic event, with clarity of thought, when that person needs it the most, is the kind of change no one can stop. These teaching moments are life preservers the powers that be can never challenge. All you have to do is be aware, be prepared, understand, and speak up. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.